Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. And today's conversation is one about legacy, leadership, and the long arc of stewardship in a family enterprise. I'm joined by Mitch Caniff, chairman and CEO of RK Packaging. RK is now more than a century old, and Mitch represents the third generation of leadership. During his tenure, he has guided the company through globalization, professionalization, major industry shifts, and long-term continuity planning, often well ahead of where peers were willing to go. Mitch has also been unusually outspoken about succession. He has written, spoken, and advised extensively on what it really takes to transition leadership across generations, not just structurally, but emotionally and culturally as well. Today, we'll talk about his journey, stepping into leadership, what he learned from succeeding his father, how RK has evolved under his watch, and now how those lessons are shaping how he thinks about the next generation who is now entering the business. Mitch, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
You too. Let's talk about your beginnings. You entered the RK business representing the third generation. What surprised you most about the transition from being part of the family to then being immersed in the business?
I think there was really no surprises, which is the shocking thing. I'd been working with my dad, going to the factory since I was about 6-7 years old, because he worked 6 days a week. So I said, how can I spend more time with my dad? He said, jump on the car. I'm going to go to the plant. So I would run around the floor and get on high lows and get in all sorts of trouble. So it started at a really early age, smelling ink, getting, as they say in our industry, getting ink underneath my fingernails. And then jumping fast forward, I went to RIT. I studied printing management and sciences. So I knew I was getting into the business and had this vision all along. If there was one major surprise that I think about, it was when someone one day said to me when I was walking into the office, one of the girls in the office said, what type of mood is your dad in today? And I was taken back by that. What do you mean by that? Depending upon his mood, apparently that's how the day went in the front office. And for those that don't really know, before HR and before we've gotten to this place of everybody being triggered by certain things, there was a lot of screaming going on. And I would like to say more of emotionally passionate about situations. And people used to shut down a bit. So I was a little surprised because my dad never scared me. We were best friends and we would do everything from photography to go out to work together. And we were buddies, but also he was very strong. So I think that was a little bit of a first shocker when I started working.
Interesting. So I think whenever there's a generational transfer, a lot of times we look to that previous generation and we see it all, right? We see the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. As Lincoln would say, it's one of the things that it's not always what I learned, it's what I've learned what not to do when I was at the table. And one of the things, listen, my dad was my mentor, my hero, my best friend. So I'm not belittling him in any way. But there'd be another minute would be at a very long conference room table and he would start slamming his hand on the table. And I would watch this energy in the group and the room of all these brilliant people just settle down. And I'm like, what are you doing, Dad? To myself, just no disrespect. And that was the main thing, I think, of why I came into the business too. There was a mutual respect at a very early age. He was respectful of me and my thoughts. And I said, I could work with this. It wasn't like, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. I felt that there was a tremendous listening on both sides.
Cool. And coming from a crazy, passionate Italian family, I can relate to a lot of that. But if you look back now, and maybe your dad in a different lens, what is one thing that, from a leadership standpoint, Mitch, what's one thing you say, Dad got that right? What was something that you look back and say, wow, he really did that well from a leadership standpoint?
Yeah, he was a pilot for 50 years. So one of the things is he believed in SOPs, checklists, and ways of running a business. So we had a pretty buttoned up employee handbook from the start. We had great quality. We've always been known since my grandfather started the company in 1922 as a printer's printer. So our attention to detail, the culture of integrity, the things about mutual respect and transparency were some of the bedrocks that I grew up in, admired, and to this day continue to make sure that we continue with.
Excellent. And I think you answered the other side of that, were some things that maybe you'd handle a little differently than your dad would. And maybe that has to do with some of that, I'll just say, overabundance of passion.
Yeah, I think we just have something to learn from everybody, and everybody has a different background, different upbringing, different traumas, different parents. And we have to be aware of that, whether they're our customers or they're our colleagues or they're our family.
Absolutely. So let's talk about, so you'd come into the business, you were fully immersed. At what point, maybe thinking back, were you starting to realize that, hey, RK can no longer operate like that old school traditional family-run business if we want to continue to maintain this growth trajectory and this great business we have? That moment you started to realize, Mitch, I think some things need to change around here.
It was very easy because I had a tremendous patience coming into the business. I became president in 1996. My father had made me president of age 30. Now, he had lost his father by a heart attack at age 30. He became president. And I don't know if there were similarities in that, but what I saw was a lot of issues around financial. And for me, I've been interviewed about this a bunch before. We talk about family business, but we have to get out of the mentality if we're in a business that it's business family. First, you have to make sure that the business is healthy and taken care of. Family members are equally important, but if we don't have a viable business that's not an ongoing concern, we will no longer have a family business and we have a lot of unemployed people. So what I had to do is I had to put matrices into the company for everything from on-time delivery to quality to profitability at the next level. We had all of financial reporting in, we had audited statements, but there seemed to be very little passion around those issues. Where my dad was an innovator, a box man, a bleeding alpha, not beta, even innovator, and all respected in the industry. But at the end of the day, I said, Dad, we have to make money. The number one rule to be in business is making money. And I came in during a very depressed economic time for the business. And I went through a bunch of very difficult years, like maybe almost a decade. And then finally, the precipice came when I asked him to step down. And at that point, I changed all the way that I paid my teammates, the way that we transparently shared financials. And from that moment on, truthfully, I think that's when the turnaround and the growth, top line, bottom line, took place.
And as you were going through that progression, and it sounds like it accelerated when you said, okay, and I can relate, Mitch, because I had a similar conversation with my dad, and I love you, Dad, but one of us needs to now do something else with their day.
And for me, there was a famous family business called PC Richards here on Long Island. And the president ran the business till, or was in the business till he was 99 years of age. And I always thought that was fascinating because my dad and I were so close and best friends. Like I could never not see him around in the business, but he couldn't play by the lessons in the sandbox because we put signs right before you walked into the sandbox. These are the rules. And as soon as I left the sandbox and he was left alone in the sandbox, if I was on a business trip, all hell broke loose. And it was, I can't do this anymore.
I'm afraid that when we're done talking, I'm going to have to call my therapist because you're bringing up way too much stuff in my mind, but it's all good. So as you're going through this progression, you're being something of a change agent in this mode. When you think about the folks that were on the team at the time, did you face much internal resistance, Mitch, as you started to
Oh,
enact
yes.
these? Or you
Oh,
did?
yeah.
Okay, talk about that for a minute, how you overcame that.
The title's right there. I was the SOB. I was the son of the
Yes, son of
boss, for
boss,
those
yes.
that don't know what that is. And the reality was there were a lot of jealous, envious haters, and also skeptics about my ability to do anything. Because during my teen years and up until then, I had quite the challenging upbringing because I was a rebel. But the good news is I got most of my rebellion done at a very early age and instead of later on. Regardless of it, I had CFOs saying things behind my back. I had controllers. I had people saying, we've never done it that way. We can't do it this way. I had people going around me and then going to my father, even though they reported to me. And so I had to do something, which is get what I called get rid of cancerous growths within the organization. They may have been there for a long time. And I approached them first. So it wasn't like I was just being an axe man. I said, if you can't be smart enough to understand that I'm the owner and running this business now and talking crap about me, I don't think you're that smart. So why don't you go work somewhere else? Because you clearly don't respect me or like where we are right now. So I went through a little bit of that. For the most part, though, it was those, you're going to have people come and go your whole life. We're 104 years of being in business this year. And I like to say people quit bosses, they don't quit jobs. And so my goal was also to try and be the best boss I could, but I didn't want to start off with someone who just didn't like me and didn't respect me. If you don't like me, that's fine. Tell me why. Show me how we could do something better. I was also open to collaboration. I think one of the reasons why we're successful as an organization is we listen to our people. I want to be better. I want to be the best. So if you've got something to say, like that's what upset me with my dad when he would slam his hand against a desk, is he was shutting down potentially great ideas. Even though we may have had a mistake or a problem, that's okay. What do we learn from it? So to me, it's like all these are learning opportunities. But yeah, that was it. I didn't really see much of it. I learned to tolerate less of it as time went on. So that's fine, but maybe you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's well said and thought through. And I've noticed that, and you see this a lot. And this is a hard one because you're Gen 3, I'm Gen 2. So it most certainly showed up for you. You've got probably some people on the team when you showed up that had been there maybe 20 years, maybe 30, who knows? And this is a hard one, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. But for family businesses, sometimes we run the risk of rewarding loyalty to the detriment of performance and capability, i.e., well, they've been here a really long time. Whereas, are they really the best person for the job? Even though they've been here a long time, maybe they were great for where we were, but maybe not so much great for where we are today or where we're going tomorrow. So how do you reconcile those where you've got people that are loyal long-term folks, but you realize that they just can't get to the next level you need to get them to, or they just can't get to that place you want them to get to in terms of their capabilities or their expertise or their performance?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's our responsibility as CEOs, presidents, owners to give them the tools that they need. So that's whether it's methods, training, machinery, or additional manpower or technology. And there's two separate, I would like to say, buckets there. You've got potentially an older population. So maybe there's an early retirement package or something to say, you've done your best here, it's time to go, which we've actually never done. People have just retired. I felt very lucky. We haven't had a lot of situations like that. And then just people just make their own decision that it's time to move on or people leave. But I really have not been in. I do have a couple of guys though that are. I've got one guy who's, I think, just about 79, and we've just got him off of some of the heavy equipment and more onto like floor stuff now. This guy, Ralph Serabi, has been showing up. I worked with him when I was 14 years of age. He's still in Virginia right now. I'll die if I don't come to work, but we also make sure he's safe. So we've taken him out of places of anything that he could hurt himself. I like good people and I like hard workers. And in today's world, I think that we have to be open to that. I think there was this period where it was like anybody over 30 was like Logan's Run for those old folks who remember the movie, you were executed. So it's no, we actually have something to offer. And there's a lot of wisdom. And yes, I think the biggest thing is my dad taught me is remain curious. Be open and continue learning and stay relevant. So as long as our teammates are learning, open, and relevant, they have a seat at the table.
Awesome. Awesome. And yeah, it's in manufacturing, although I think it's starting to turn. We saw a lot of veteran teams where folks were getting to that age where they loved to work, but they still, their body was just not cooperating anymore and it was time to go. And sadly, there's not always that next generation ready to take that seat. So there was a lot of scrambling going on. And I'm talking about the greater manufacturing industry in the US here. But I think young people are starting to realize, you know what? Really great careers can be had in the manufacturing space. And I think
they're showing.
It's
Yeah, they're
starting to show
showing.
up a little bit.
Yeah, they're
Are
showing
you?
that in vocational schools are starting to get full again, and whether it's plumbing or mechanical or electrical, it's stable careers with good companies, with good paychecks, with good pensions and 401ks. And you know what's going on with AI right now, let's face it, I would not be wanting to run a university going forward because they're in trouble. The reliance on ChatGPT AI information. Look at this meeting. We're recording all this. It's going to be summarized into a document with proper grammar and complete sentences and punctuation. I'm just kidding, but seriously, it's here. Making things, building things, engineers are the future, I believe, at least right now.
Yeah, for sure. And although with twins currently midway through college, they still manage to make the tuition go up every year. I don't know. I keep waiting and wondering when is that going to stop? But maybe soon. Who knows?
Good luck with that.
I think you've commented in the past that when it comes to our RK, its reputation and culture are the real power assets of the organization. So when you think about legacy, Mitch, and being a third gen, how do you decide which elements of the RK legacy are foundational, i.e., worth carrying forward well into the future, versus those that might be either their time has passed or limiting in some way?
Again, I think it comes down to words like integrity, words like discipline, words like quality, attention to detail, follow through, communication, over communication, whatever platform that may look like, and respect. At the end of the day, I don't want to be in an organization that I'm getting screamed at in front of people or someone screaming at me, whether it's the way we treat each other. There's always going to be an issue. There's always something that's going to happen. Let's, again, create a learning environment where we learn from those mistakes, as painful as it may be at that moment, and be better and grow from it. So I think those foundationally are important to me and family. At the end of the day, we've got fathers and sons working together, nepotism in our company that I'm very happy to have, and husbands and wives. I've got a husband, a wife, and daughter, and a son working for us. So I want to continue that environment. And transparency, I guess, is the one word that I guess Ray Dalio talked about in his book, Principles, and about Bridgewater Capital. And I believe sharing as much as possible, good, bad, and ugly, what's happening with our customers, what's happening with us financially, where we are from a quality perspective, what we need to do, our wins and our losses. So those are all foundational things I'd like to see, no matter what business or what we get into, remain.
Excellent. Excellent. And we learn a lot from our mentors, and sometimes that parental figure is a strong mentor. In your case, had a very close relationship with your dad. And there's the leadership habits and ideas that we bring forward that are really good, but then there's the ones that are maybe not so good. So I wonder if you could think, was there a leadership habit or belief that you had to unlearn as the business started to scale and grow?
I think it's just been my life work. I had someone in my life that was very passionate. And the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So, in the early days when I was taking over the organization, I think people were scared to come to me with bad news because I was pretty feisty and I would get very emotional about it because let's face it, it's our company, it's our heritage. And again, for those who are listening, who are learning more about family businesses, third generation businesses are rags to riches to rags in three generations. Typically, we're the ones to screw it up. So the pressure that I felt also in our seat was that not on my watch. And so we had a lot of very close calls early on before I turned the business around, and it was scary. So what happens with fear, it comes usually across as anger or rage, but underneath is that deep level of fear. So I think I just became more confident and also realized that this is just part of business, your ups and downs. It's managing the valleys as much as managing the hills. And yeah, and go to bed and start again the next day. And generally, it's going to be a better day the next day. So whatever happened.
Excellent, excellent. And I always thought it was the second generation that was more inclined to screw things up. So I'm feeling a little better now for, that we're
Yeah,
having this
I didn't have
conversation.
the percentages. I think you made it to 44%, but mine dropped to 12% success. And then it keeps going down further. But it's more that the business gets sold or the business, it's more screwing up than necessarily like we just sold it or we did divested or whatever.
Something else that I've been curious about, and I'd like to get your take. I know that early in my career, I felt the weight of that stewardship as a second gen. And so there was that voice in the back of my mind saying, Ed, don't screw up. Don't run the ship aground. Whatever you do, just don't screw it up. And as a result, I think I had a tendency to play it safe a lot. And sometimes in business, we can't always play it safe a lot. Sometimes prudence dictates we should, but there is some level of risk that needs to be brought into play to create opportunities, to go after new opportunities. So, when you think about yourself, your own style, Mitch, and your own journey, how do you balance that? Okay, you're the steward of a third gen, over 100-year company. How do you balance that idea of playing it safe versus when is a little bit of risk okay?
Yeah, that is definitely that hits home as well, because my dad was like, he was a kid. Until the 91 and a half when he died, he was just a kid and he was fearless. And I always honored his fearlessness. Truthfully, it's what he did, but he also didn't know when to stop being fearless. And I was like the adult most of our business relationship.
That's
I don't know
funny.
if you're getting the picture of this, but he would be like, "It's my last hurrah. It's my last hurrah." I'm like, "Yeah, but your last hurrah is about to kill us." It's like whether we bought a label company, bought this other printing company without the right due diligence, or he went and fought New York State on an environmental claim against Elliott Spitzer, and I can go on and on, but he didn't care. And I took that with a grain of salt. I said, okay, there's responsible risk taking, and then there's what I call challenged on the border of irresponsible risk taking. So I'm running the business truthfully, like we have publicly held shareholders that are looking at how I perform. Yes, a lot of family businesses. For those also, another great book is Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I think when you analyze your own business, your own parents, uncles, sisters, brothers, are they family-centered? Are they self-centered? Are they business-centered? Are they money-centered? What is it that's drawing them? And my father was all, this was his baby. So he really just did what he wanted. Where I was like, you know what? We can't be a going concern. And my responsibility is these 260 people working for us in three states. And I want to make sure that everyone gets to pay their college tuition if their kids are going to college, their doctor, their mortgages, and we have a future. With that being said, I got my arms around the debt level. I cleaned up a lot of challenges that we had. But yet, I've always admired my father's innovation drive that my grandfather started. We would go to Drupa every 4 years and look at the state of latest technology in print, finishing, and everything in our business. We make packaging for the cosmetic industry. We work on work for the consumer products business, like tampons, and we'll even work on things for the home business. But everything is a box and everything is made out of a package. Those machines are very expensive. So we've continued to invest in the latest Heidelbergs and Bopst equipment and finishing equipment and incorporate great maintenance programs so they last a decent amount, but always buy new and always upgrading. Like the latest is now is for Amazon. Everybody's going online. So we've been doing Amazon transparency and dynamic QR coding so we can label all the packaging that we're doing. And a number of our customers are insisting it's on every package. So that's a recent event. So we're continuing to double down, but I think it's a balance responsibly, I guess is the best way I would say is. And the bigger risk for me, and I'll just finish up this question, is I've read, and when I wrote my book, Taking Over, I interviewed a lot of people who did acquisitions, and the majority of those acquisitions unfortunately failed. In some cases, very profitable, very successful companies took on more they can chew. So I'd say that I probably leaned back the most from that because the amount of debt load needed to acquire another organization. But most importantly, what we talked about 5 minutes ago is taking a culture, part of our 104 years, and trying to meld it into ours is the real secret if that's going to work or not. Because if it doesn't, that can fall and then you just destroy everything. Again, as I was saying, that's probably something I'll lean on my sons more for, is looking at what is the future. Do you see an acquisition? Do you see another region of the country, another industry, et cetera? And I'll be there to guide and support and shepherd the ideas. But my goal will be to help them avoid massive pitfall if I can.
Gotcha. So to a quick aside for those listeners that have never been to a printing and packaging facility, if you can't get to one of our case facilities, go check them out online, because if you see some of the footage of their facility and how they run it and how they structure it, and if you know the industry a bit, it'll take your breath away. It's quite remarkable what you've built, Mitch, and continue to build on. It's
Thank you.
definitely, when I was first looking at some of that footage, I'm like, wow, this is a best-in-class operation.
Thank
I also want to touch on the book. You've been very public about succession planning. You've talked about it. You've written about it. You wrote the book on it, or a book on it. Tell me, there we go. It's Taking Over. Talk about that for a minute. What inspired you to put it down on paper?
I started journaling when I was like 17. My headmaster at school said basically, I think this would be good for you. And he was absolutely 1,000% correct. It helped my writing skills, but mostly it was a psychological, emotional, and way to release any sort of tension or challenges I was having. Coming into the business and dealing with my father and butting heads a lot and stuff, it gave me an opportunity to release without getting into a fist fight a lot of my frustrations and challenges and thoughts. And then I started during that period of time in the mid-90s, there was a famous book collection called Software for Dummies, This for Dummies, That for Dummies. And I was like, there was no succession planning for dummies. And everything that I looked at online was these very thick university studies done by people that would put me to sleep when I would start reading it. So my idea was, how do I come up with a book that has tips at the end of it, each chapter, and then interview real people? So I interviewed the Burlington Coat Factory family. I interviewed William Lauder. I interviewed Mitch Modell, Donny Deutsch. I interviewed small printers. I interviewed people in the garment business. I just Mitch Modell and his brother from the Modell sporting good business. So I wanted to say what worked, what didn't work, what would you suggest? And then I tried to just break it into an airplane read, something you could, from LA to New York, you could finish in one sitting. And also, if there was one tip that resonated, you could take it back and hopefully it helps your family. I didn't realize it would galvanize into such a nice moment for me. I was an adjunct professor at Columbia Family Business School for about 5 years. I was at Fox Business. I was a main family business. I was part of Transitions Family Business. I spoke out in Phoenix and Florida. So it was on a lot of panels, and it was a great learning opportunity. So I learned more than I wrote. Let's put it that way. And that was it. It was just one of those dreams. It's a $3 business card, I call it. But for those that are interested, it's called Taking Over: Insider Tips from a Third Generation CEO. And you can go on Amazon and download it to your iPad or your Kindle or whatever you have.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes. And I will definitely be checking that out. And as will, I'm sure, a lot of not only listeners, but also past guests, because I'm thinking about an earlier guest who I think he was fourth gen. And I asked him about that experience. He's like, well, I really wish there was a book about this when I took over, because I didn't know anything. I had to figure everything out on my own. He goes, I wish somebody just wrote a darn book. I'm like, I think they have that now.
And what it is, the book keeps changing. I started writing another one. My dad asked me, please write about how special our relationship was in your next book. Like, he was already pressuring me to write another book. So I started writing, and the year just got away. And I definitely want to do one at another time. But a big part of the book, I believe, is for the non-family business members in your book. Like, I think the issue is developing a true career path development program that helps outline those non-family members for continued reduction of turnover and for continued commitment to your organization. So I know there's a good part of that I'm working on currently right now with monthly meetings, outside facilitator, and my core team. So we start addressing that as we have teammates starting to retire over the next 2 to 3 years.
Excellent, excellent. Something else that I definitely want to make sure we cover today is you now have the next generation has officially entered the business. Your two twin sons are now actively working at RK. From your own experiences and all that you've learned from those that you spoke to about the book and all that you've seen, What's influencing right now how you're approaching this phase and how you're approaching their onboarding and joining the company?
Yeah, I think one of the things when I spoke to the people, say Burlington Coat Factory, for those who remember that company, the Milsteins, they had a very strange situation. But what seemed to work really well is one of the daughters was running the men's apparel and the other one was running the kids' apparel. And they each were able to be in charge of the P&Ls and the statement for those. They'd listen to each other in board meetings or management meetings, but the final say was held by each individual on either side. And we don't have that big a company, but the idea is that right now, Josh Caniff is managing millions of dollars worth of new sales that he's brought in as basically an entrepreneur, as a project manager, as a marketer, and looking at systems for us and fired up. And I am, because he's doing such a great job and I couldn't be more proud. And then Max, only with the company now 5 months, he'd started at KPMG and was handling integration of software systems for DC Metro, looking at Oracle and a bunch of other companies coming in. So he's working right now on a potential new ERP system for us, other customer service and sales tools for us. So more of a financial aspect, job closeouts, estimating materials, resource planning, as well as purchasing. Right now, different silos, but we're also having weekly meetings as a trio to discuss what do we need to be addressing right away and what are our goals for 26. So I think that's an important thing, is one of the challenges Steve's Milstein, back to Burlington Coat Factory's father, said. He said, "What's my succession plan? My succession plan is when I die, they'll figure it out." A lot of families are like that, believe it or not. Or, and at the end of the day, they really had to sell the business and just disperse the money to make it happen, because the infighting was. So that's always an option. But for those family businesses that want to stay around, I like the latter.
Yes, I would be inclined to agree. So when it comes to the your two boys, was it a high likelihood that they would join the family business, or were you surprised? Like, how did talk for a moment about how that those conversations happened and how they came to be there. Was it you had an inkling and it just emerged organically, or was it a bit more deliberate?
Maybe because I put them inside of my book in the back cover on the printing press when they were 8 years old. Because on the beginning of the book, I was in the cover with my dad, with my uncle. There was a little hint there. No, I think one of the things I do talk about in my book that my dad did an amazing job at is he got me involved, like when I was 6 years old. I went to the sales office with him and would sit in his chair while he was running around the office. There was a level of excitement and interest, and we made stuff for a living too. There's something about bringing home something that you can touch and feel, see, and then go to the store and see in this sense of pride in it. So with my boys, I just tried to replicate what my dad did. I would bring home samples. I'd ask them how something was made. I had them start working in the factory during the summers when they were 16, although it wasn't like I was, because I commuted from New York to Hauppauge and we're now in Virginia. It was a little too far to commute, but we'll spend several weeks down there during the summer and move them from different discipline to different discipline, and get a sense of what it takes to make what we do. It's really exposure. I think that's the best thing you can do in a family business, is just expose as early as possible. And they're either going to gravitate to it, show interest in it. But I think as young children or young people, let me rephrase that, I don't think we ever really know what we want to do. We say we want to be an astronaut or a fireman or a police officer in the old days. Maybe we just want to say we want to just be a tech titan these days, or an influencer. But I think we really don't know what we want to be. So I think as mentors and parents and guardians, I think it's, if you really want them in the business, the other thing I said is I would come home and be excited about what I did. I think there's a lot of people that come home and bitch about their job, or not like what their job was. And I was always fired up about all the different hats I would have to wear. One day I'm wearing a HR hat, the other day I'm wearing a sales hat, the other day I'm a finance hat, I'm selling the banks, I'm selling the customers. So I always felt like there's always something going on. And I think, and then I said, give it a shot. If you don't like it, go do something else. And that was what my dad said. Go do, it's such a shame, and it would be a terrible legacy to just let go. So if you don't like it, you don't like it. Let me
Well,
just.
They're here now, and it sounds like they're off to a great start. Something we'll certainly be watching as they develop and grow to the next to their next rung of the ladder, if you will.
Yeah, I'm super
Exciting
proud of them.
times.
Super proud of them, and just I'm re-engaged, I guess that's the other thing. So the gift they've given me is that my fire's been rekindled because of them.
Yeah, and I can honestly attest that I saw that in my father too, as I was about ready to go a different path when he and I sat down and had the heart to heart, and he gave me a moment of pause and he said, "Well, decide over the weekend, because if you don't want it, I'm selling it." And I got three or four people.
No pressure.
Oh, okay. Let me go do that. But also share with our listeners, if you do want that next generation to take a keen interest, don't bring the bad home. Bring more of the good home.
Bring the
You
good
know.
home. And also, I think the other thing that I doubled down on was financial literacy and sharing stuff that was way above their heads at an earlier age. I didn't care. It was like, here's a balance sheet. Here's the income statement. These are the things that we're doing. This is how sales are. This is where we are profit-wise. This is what our debt level looks like. Just start. And they could look at you with, you've got three heads, but then all of a sudden it's, oh, one word popped up. I remember him talking about that. So I think that was the one thing, unfortunately, on the opposite, my dad didn't do for me. And I really didn't get deeply involved in finance till my late 30s. And that was only because I had to turn around a company. So it was a very expensive master's
Oh,
in
gotcha.
learning how to run a business. And then, oh, okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. But I wish I'd gotten that financial acumen at a much younger age.
Said a great point, and thankfully something that my father instilled in me, looking at P&Ls when I was in like my young 20s and whatnot. As you look to the future now, you've got the boys involved in the business, you're actively engaged. What are some things on the horizon? What's exciting you right now, Mitch? Or what are some things coming up either in RK or in the industry that are really exciting for you right now?
I just think the word challenge at the end of the day, it's like we're in this, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? This crisis democracy or crisis consumerism. We're dealing with geopolitical events. We're dealing with pandemics. We're dealing with wars. We're dealing with how to navigate all this stuff. It's, if you're a dancer, now is the time to really dance because there is no sitting idle or still. What happened or worked for you yesterday is not necessarily going to work for you tomorrow. And I think my favorite expression is that's why they make the front window 10 times bigger than the back window. You can take a look at the rear view window and get a sense of pause, but that's history. Now let's move forward and use it to move forward. I'm excited about the new equipment. I'm excited about the new industries that we've been going after. We've been literally working in, believe it or not, cookie box industry. We've been working in electronics. We've been looking at healthcare, at nutraceuticals. We've been doing work in the coffee industry. So where we were very one scoped, one area, we're branching off from into other segments. And then new systems coming on board. I'm super excited about AI that we've been integrating into our press room, into our operations, into our upfront offices. So I think that our customers are going to see that. I think robotics are super exciting in terms of what's on the horizon. I mean, it's here. The question is which model, which unit, what's the function, and where we are with that. And then seeing what they want to do. I think the big thing is as I progress, I'm going to lean more towards on what's your vision. I think that was the one gift that some of my teammates gave me. Walter Shields gave me when I first really took over and asked my dad step down. He said, "I'm behind you. But can you tell me what your vision is?" And it was intimidating because I was turning around a company, I was shutting down a factory, and I had to be very decisive on what that was and articulate about what that looked like. And he said, "Great, let's do it." And so I'm really, at some point, they'll get there, no pressure. Now, but over the next 2 years, where do you want to take the company now?
I think you've touched on at least what my experience has been is one of the biggest indicators for me when I look at a business that's transitioning generation is, does that next generation have a vision? And honestly, in the early years, Mitch, my opinion is it doesn't even have to be very good. They just have to have it, and they've got to own it, and they've got to love it, and then it's okay. And they'll figure it out. They'll refine it. But if they say, "I want to do what my dad did, maybe a little better," that's not really a vision. Or if they say, "I think we could be this," or "I think we could be that," or "I really want to know what it's like to get to here." Cool. Okay. We can get behind that. So it's clear that you had one at the moment when you needed it most, and in a very challenging circumstance, it sounds like, too. But here you are, so clearly.
Yeah, no, there were days where I felt like I was just walking through a plate glass window every day in the office.
Oh, yes. One step forward, six steps back. Yes.
Yeah, but it's been relentless. It's never giving up. And that's it. It's every day. Just get dressed, get out of bed,
Yeah.
try it again.
Yep.
I think what happens, a lot of people quit on the 1 yard line, no
Yep.
matter what it is in life. Or I can't. And I was like, yeah, but it was just one more step and you would have been in the end zone. So I think that's it. Some years are easier than others. Some days are easier than others. Just to keep doing the best you can. That's all I can ask for my boys. Just do the
Yeah.
best you can.
Yeah. And there was another guest. He was also a mentor of mine and a guest on our show. And the piece of advice he offered up, or one of them, was that from his dad was, do one more thing today. So if you're tired, you're beat, you're mentally exhausted, push through, do one more thing, and then you can go.
One more
And
call,
one more call, one more email,
whatever it is.
no. And I've really taken that to heart, and darned if that one more thing doesn't turn into gold more often than not. And you do have to have the tenacity to push through when you're shot, you're tired, you're sleepless, whatever, and you got to do that one more thing, but you go and do it and magic happens. Certainly a piece of advice I've held dear. For our listeners, and some may be looking to step into the family business, some might be leaders that are looking to step back as others step in. What's a final piece of advice you might give to anyone that's looking to navigate that generational transition themselves?
Don't be scared.
Okay.
Take the fear and step into it. There's when going through hell, keep going, as Winston Churchill would say. I think for those patriarchs of the family, start early with your next gen. I think the most important thing is look for open, honest communication. Ask for what you want, listen, and mutual respect. I think the challenge is working for somebody that may not be there. And I'll leave one other thought to that as well, is that I used an outside industrial psychologist to come in to help open up dialogue and create conversation that I couldn't do alone with my father. It became a level playing field. And sometimes it's even important now, it's easy with AI, just record the conversations. Because the big thing, my dad would say, I never said that. What are you talking about? You never said that. Yeah, that's it. I think it's tenacity, the word you use.
Yeah.
It's like you just got to say, okay, listen, Dad, I really, or Mom, or Uncle, or Billy, or Joe, I really want to make this happen. We need a format to communicate. We need governance that we agree on collectively, and we are allowed to hold each other like a football referee would. That's offsides.
Yeah.
That's a blatant face mask, Paul.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing. It's creating that. And truthfully, if anybody wants to contact me or reach out, just go to rk.com, which is spelled ARKAY.com. And there's info at RK. And also, like you were saying, we have a YouTube channel that's RK, YouTube channel, that's got videos. And I do a bunch of roundtables with teammates about things that have worked, that didn't work, and the industry itself. So I'll be happy to help or listen, anything I can do to support anybody in this current environment and transitioning within their companies.
Wonderful. Much appreciated. And last question. If somebody did want to check out your book, what's the best way for them to find it? Is it on Amazon or where?
Yeah, Amazon.com. Again, it's just called Taking Over, Insider Tips from a Third Generation CEO. And really should have been why I fired my father from the family business. But I digress. That's another whole story. And he loved the title. And I wish I'd used that title because I probably would have sold more books. But I did sell quite a bunch. So I'm proud of that. And it's Kindle, or I believe for your iPad. I think they may even be sold out at this point on the book. So I have to see if we go reprint it again. But
Excellent.
thank you for
Excellent.
pushing that, Ed. And I enjoyed our conversation today. Is there anything else that I could share?
I think we could probably talk for hours and days, Mitch, because there's so much synergy between your journey and so many things that are resonating. But I think we could probably leave it there, because this conversation certainly been a powerful reminder that leadership in a family business is not about holding on or handing off. It's about stewardship, timing, and having tremendous self-awareness, of which you've demonstrated so readily, to evolve as the business evolves, as much as you have done. Thank you for sharing not only what you've built, but how your thinking has evolved along the way in your journey. Your perspectives as a third gen are awesome, leading and navigating both continuity of change and really bringing forth the real value in the organization that shows that as a third gen, you can really make an impact, make a difference, and make a business bigger than it was. So again, we've been speaking with Mitch Caniff of RK Packaging, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time. Mitch, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.